Welcome to the Gnostic Waves, where we bring you topics of an esoteric, philosophical and psychological nature. I'm your host, Diana Azam, and would like to thank you for tuning in live or listening to the show recording. Now, today I'm joined by our special guest, Christian Keith, who will be taking us through a review of the movie The Matrix, well, from an esoteric perspective. So you may have noticed our different intro track, which is from the movie, if you're familiar with it. And so, Christian, hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for inviting me onto the show, Diana.
Oh, and thank you for your time and reviewing this very intriguing movie.
Yes, I come from a bit of a film background and just come into Gnosis, and so I thought I'd combine the two of my passions, I guess you could say, in the show. So we'll do a review of The Matrix, but from the Gnostic point of view, we could say, especially in terms of the awakening.
Okay, well, I know you've got a lot to cover, so I leave the audience with you.
Thank you very much. So I want to talk about The Matrix, as it's a fantastic film to watch from, you could say, any point of view. So as an action film or as an esoteric film or whichever way we want to perceive it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the creators before we started and a few introducing some terms and some ideas and then going more deeply into the scenes of The Matrix and how they work and how the characters work and things like that. So the Wachowski brothers originally made a film called Bound, and it was a neo-noir themed crime thriller, and that got them the clout to be able to make The Matrix and then the trilogies. They went on to make Speed Racer and then another esoteric film, we could say, or a film that has esoteric leanings, Cloud Atlas, another science fiction film in a sort of esoteric or philosophical way, Jupiter Ascending, and currently they've just finished a TV show on Netflix called Sense8. So this film, The Matrix, was released in 1999, and it's an interesting time because it's at the turn of the century. And at the turn of the century, we had something called pre-millennium tension. And the reason for this is because there was internal clocks of computers only used the last two digits, and so it was at 1999, and they only used the last two digits, so 99. And it was thought that possibly when we move over to the new year 2000, that 99 would go back to 00 and computers would falter. There would be huge technological issues. Computers would shut down. And because our society runs on technology and computers, there might be a huge issue involved. So there's that sort of technological interest or anxiety that plays on the themes of the time. And so there's that pretext of anxiety that The Matrix captured, that technological angst, we could say. So I said that The Matrix is a mixture of many things. So popular culture, many different movie genres, comic books. The Wachowski brothers wrote comic books. It's particularly a cool film, like you watch it and it's just very cool. When you get to the end of the film, any type of really cool film, you really want the next film to come out as quickly as you can, like you just can't wait. I remember feeling that when I saw Return of the Jedi. I'm like, when's the next film coming? It's a particularly well-made type film. And most importantly, it has a deep philosophical and esoteric spiritual bent to the film. So as we were saying, it has many layers. It has your popcorn sort of enjoyable factor, but then it has a thematic and something deeper enrolled into the film itself. So The Matrix influenced many films beyond the trilogy. So we have, especially I think in terms of the nature of artificial intelligence, I mean, sure, science fiction and the look of the film, but also there were films coming out. One was actually called Artificial Intelligence. And recently there's been a spate of these sorts of films like Transcendence and Ex Machina, Interstellar, The Machine, I, Robot, not as recent, Chappie. A lot of films at the moment are dealing with that idea of artificial intelligence and that it might actually be something greater than humanity can sort of stand. I guess the other thing that the Matrix films did was make action films out of, or action stars out of anyone, because of the high wire work, the kung fu action, the high wire work. So shortly after this film, or a little bit after the time of the Matrix, a film like Charlie's Angels can be made, where you've got females running around, you know, kicking ass basically. Whereas before action films, you needed someone like Schwarzenegger, you know, you needed a Stallone, a Jean-Claude Van Damme, a muscly guy, or someone who knew kung fu or a particular type of jiu-jitsu like Steven Seagal. But the technological advancements allowed for quite miraculous things to be done by any actor or actress. I mean, we could have had an action film with the Golden Girls in it. The Golden Girls, you know, could have done an action film because of the technological CGI aspects. So this film takes from a lot of sources. You could say it in an unashamed way. So the neo-noir look of the film, The 13th Floor, which was a science fiction film that came out just before it, and Dark City. And in fact, the sets from Dark City were used in the film. Ghost in the Shell, which is an anime film, awesome anime film. Comic books in general, you know, the shot composition. It was storyboarded by Steve Scrooge, who'd worked on The Amazing Spider-Man, Jeff Darrow. The cyberpunk influence of William Gibson, his most famous book being Neuromancer. Even the video game Tomb Raider had a shot that was very similar in the film with the elevator. And it had many technical aspects to the film that gave it a sense of awe. So we know the bullet time photography. So it wasn't the first film to use bullet time photography, but it used it in a beautifully thematic way that enhanced the story. High wire Hong Kong action films, they use Yun Wu Ping. You know, some of the action shots look like, or set scenes look like a John Woo film, especially in the lobby. Lots of reflections. But most importantly, there was also heavy esoteric influences. So we could say, ostensibly, The Matrix itself is a cyberpunk film, that is a dystopian film, that is a science fiction film, that it's a martial arts film, that it's an action film. But really underlying everything in this film is the process of the awakening of consciousness. So the films, The Matrix is generally considered the best film, and the other two have said to be not as good as the other two. And I would say the reason for this is because the first film is really about the awakening of consciousness, which is something that everyone can relate to, while the second and third film are a little bit more further down the path. It becomes a little bit more abstract. So we'll talk about that perhaps in another podcast when I talk about the other Matrix films, Reloaded and Revolutions. And so this film takes from many esoteric traditions that we know and love, ones that are close to us as well. So obviously Buddhism, the idea of the guru, we know Kung Fu, the Buddhist philosophies. You know, you have a lot of the characters talking in koans. You know, they say very cool things that are trying to break the mind. Morpheus talks in koans sometimes. The Oracle says things and you're not quite sure what they mean. There's Plato's Allegory of the Cave. If we're interested in understanding that, we can go onto YouTube and Orson Welles narrates one. I highly recommend that one. Christianity or Christian esotericism from the Bible, the book of Daniel, the name Trinity, the story of the Christ, which is essentially what Neo is about. Pista Sophia, which is really the three movies, not just the first one, but all three. The name of Zion. And we also have the Greek mystery. So we have the name Morpheus, the Oracle, which is like the Oracle of Delphi, and also some 70s philosophy and 80s philosophy, like the brain in a vat, and a few other things that we'll talk about. So I wanted to talk a little bit about universal truths to get an understanding of the film. And there are universal truths, the true nature of things. So there are things that are universally true. Then there are expressions of that universal truth. So the tarot, the Kabbalah, the teachings of the Buddha, the parables of the Christ, Aztec codices, the Emerald Tablet, the I Ching, the Book of the Dead, all these things represent a universal truth. However, we must have to understand that it is only an expression of a culture of something that's universal. The function of religion or mysticism is to express these universal truths to the people. And so they do it based in the nature of a cultural aspect, we could say. So these universal truths are always given in time and space and are dependent on the society and the people within it. So what this really means is that we can have a universal truth, but it has a different name. And so, for example, like the Holy Trinity. So we know it as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit from the Christian religion. However, in the Hebrew faith, it's called Keter, Chokmah, and Binah. So it's the same thing, but just culturally in a different thing. So it's trying to untap a truth, a universal truth, but they call it something else. And so in the Vedic tradition, they have Rama, Vishnu, and Shiva. And once again, this is the same thing. This is the same Holy Trinity, and they call it the Trimurti. And then in the Egyptians, they have Osiris, Isis, and Horus. So we have to accept that different religions or different esoteric traditions express universal truths in their own way, and that they do this with varying degrees of success. And so the main universal truth in this film, because it's just another expression of a universal truth, is the hero's journey and the esoteric path to spiritual enlightenment. So there's a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and it understands the nature of myth. And the title itself tells you that it is the same universal truth. It's just told with a hero with a thousand faces. So he's a different face. So he's the Christ here. He's Krishna here. He's Quetzalcoatl there. He's Fuji there. He's the Buddha there. So the hero does the same thing, and he's always a hero. However, it's just done within a different cultural context. So this path or this journey that we're interested in is really the journey of the soul, of the essence or the consciousness expanding and awakening itself through direct experience and knowledge. And this film shows this very, very well. And so, as we said, the Matrix itself concentrates on one aspect of the path, the earlier part, we could say, the awakening. And as I've said, people can relate to the awakening. They can relate to it in a basic way, like to become more enlightened in some kind of knowledge that they know within the physical world, or esoteric knowledge. So we'll want to look at the Matrix in regards to the awakening and the way that the awakening works and the way that they've expressed that in the Wachowski brothers in this film. So very interestingly, at the same time in 1999, another film about the awakening of consciousness was shown in cinemas, and it was called The Truman Show. And so they used the reality TV, which is really a fantasy, to express that same idea of the awakening. So maybe there was something going on in 1999. You know, the nature of awakening was strong around the world, and so these movies were made. So the last thing I wanted to talk about, just to get an introduction to the film and the scenes and how it all works, is the nature of archetypes. So an archetype is an expression or representation of a universal truth or truths. So the characters of the Matrix themselves give us a sense of a universal truth needed in the process of awakening. So we have Morpheus, who is about belief and trust. And he's known as a part, we could say, is Atman, or the being, for those who know about those sorts of things. And he's the guide or the guru. So in other films, we know it as Yoda in the Star Wars, or Gandalf. And so in the film, Morpheus says quite a lot, follow me. You know, this follow the white rabbit. And he's always believing in Neo. And he's always wanting other people to believe, because we need that belief and that trust in the process. And then we have Neo, the hero of the film. And the main aspect of Neo is choice or will, which relates to the essence, another part that we talk about in Gnosis. So Neo is always given choices throughout the film, and he needs to take the higher choice, or the choice of awakening, the choice of everyone, the right choice, the choice of sacrifice, of trust, of selflessness. And so he represents that aspect throughout the film. And then we also have Trinity. So Trinity relates to love, an aspect called the Divine Mother and the spiritual soul. And she's that loving, connecting force that we need in the film as well. So these three characters interact, and they all have a certain mission in the film. We just have to say that there's a spoiler alert here. If you haven't seen the film, go and watch the film, then listen to the podcast. So Morpheus believes that he will find the one. Neo is the one, and Trinity will fall in love with the one. And so we have a couple of other characters that are very interesting as well. We have Mr. Smith, played by Hugo Weaving, who is just fantastic in the film. They're all fantastic, but Hugo Weaving is just marvelous as Mr. Smith. I have to say that I never trusted him since he played Douglas Jardine in Bodyline, but that's another thing. But he represents the ego, or the external forces against the awakening. So he's always trying to stop the process of awakening from an external force or an external point of view. So he believes the process of awakening to be wrong, and he just does what he does because, as we find out, he's just a program. And we also have Cypher, who's played by Joe Pantoliano, who's usually in their films. And so he represents the internal forces against the awakening, what we call the ego. So doubt, fear, selfishness, these sorts of aspects within us, what we call the ego. And then lastly, we have the Oracle, which is known as the Divine Mother, or a higher source who knows, who's beyond a lot of things. He also guides every character along the way. So we have the basics of the film to give an introduction so we can sort of understand what we're doing here. So the film starts with an introduction to Trinity, and Trinity escapes. She's trapped in, and escapes. So there's a conversation between Trinity, and who's played by Carrie-Anne Moss, and Cypher. And we realise that Trinity is on patrol and she's watching Neo, and she's unsure whether the line is hacked, and we find out that Trinity is trapped. So we can assume that Cypher... This is the first point where Cypher's trying to betray the group. So we also learn also during this conversation that Morpheus believes that Neo is the one. So interestingly, Trinity is trapped in the heart of the City Hotel. And so, as we know, the heart represents love, and Trinity, her character, her archetype is about love. At the end of the scene, Trinity gets out of the Matrix by a split second, or she would have been crushed by a truck driven by Agent Smith. Very interestingly, it's said that the Wachowski brothers asked for a $60 million budget and they only got $10 million to make the film. And so what they decided to do is just do this one scene really well, and then they gave it to the producers and to the bigwigs, and they really liked the opening scene and they gave them the rest of the money to make the film. And it has a very big impact because it's very, we don't know what's going on, but it's already pretty cool. And so the credits roll, and then the next scene we see Neo asleep. And so transitioning through the credits themselves, the camera comes through Neo's computer screen, specifically where it's saying searching, which is an interesting aspect. And on the screen it says, "Wake up, Neo. The Matrix has you. Follow the white rabbit, knock, knock, Neo." And so if we reflect in the film, we understand that Trinity has sent this. And so Neo goes to the door because there's knocking at the door, and he finds one of his friends or one of his associates, and he's named Choi. And interestingly, Choi itself, especially if you say it quickly or if you say it in plural, Choi's, it sounds like choice. So there's some arrangement that goes on. He gives them some files. This is Neo as a hacker and Troy thanks him.
Hallelujah. You're my savior, man. My own personal Jesus Christ.
So during the film, the word Jesus Christ is said many times, or be Jesus, Jesus Christ, these sorts of things. And we could say that is a story of the Christ, the story of Pistis Sophia entangled within the Matrix. So Troy asks Neo if he wants to go out on the town. And he actually says something interesting. He says that he should unplug. And he doesn't really seem that interested. And then he sees a tattoo of a white rabbit on Du Jour, who's played by Ada Nicodemo. I'm not quite sure how to say her name, but she's an awesome actress, and decides to go with them. So we have to understand that the first step of awakening of consciousness is to know that you're asleep. So Neo's asleep, and then that's the first thing that we see him, and so he has to know that he's asleep. So it's also like this in the physical world. If you're physically asleep, you can't wake up. Like if you think that you're awake physically, but you're asleep, you cannot wake up. So one cannot escape a prison if he believes himself to be free when you don't see any bars in the windows. So we have to be searching for the awakening. Something isn't quite right with the present way of our life. And so there begins that search it can take a long time. You never know what's going to happen in regards to the awakening. So we might just feel something, and then eventually comes along. So like a Gnostic class or a Buddhist class or some esoteric class. So the next scene is at the nightclub. So Troy and his associates take Neo to the nightclub. And while Troy seems very happy there in this underground nightclub where there's a lot of drinking and drugs and S&M and all this weird stuff going on in there, Neo's by himself. Neo's not quite part of this world. He doesn't quite fit in. Neo is there, but he's not there. And so Trinity introduces herself to Neo, and this is done in a very intimate way. Almost like Trinity is picking him up, which is related to her character of love. And she tells him she knows that he's searching for something.
I know why you're here, Neo. I know what you've been doing. I know why you hardly sleep, why you live alone, and why night after night you sit at your computer. You're looking for him. You know, because I was once looking for the same thing. And when he found me, he told me I wasn't really looking for him. I was looking for an answer. It's the question that drives us in here. It's the question that brought you here. You know the question, just as I did.
What is the Matrix?
The answer is up there, Neo. It's looking for you. And it will find you if you want it to.
So Trinity talks to Neo, as we said, in a very intimate way. She asks him about the questions. So the awakening has that aspect. Someone who wishes to awaken will have a burning desire to comprehend the big questions of life. They will want to know if there's a God. They'll want to know if they can stop their suffering. They want to know what happens after death. They want to know all these things. It's the question, but we wish to go and find the answer. So she represents that. She's helping Neo to find this burning desire within him, to have it sated, we could say. So the next scene is in his office where he works. And because Neo went to the nightclub the night before, he wakes up late for work and his boss reprimands him.
You have a problem with authority, Mr. Anderson. You believe that you are special, that somehow the rules do not apply to you. Obviously, you are mistaken. This company is one of the top software companies in the world because every single employee understands that they are part of a whole. Thus, if an employee has a problem, the company has a problem. The time has come to make a choice, Mr. Anderson. Either you choose to be at your desk on time from this day forth, or you choose to find yourself another job. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Mr. Reinhardt, perfectly clear.
So, interestingly, Mr. Reinhardt may be an allusion to Luke Reinhardt, which is a pen name for the man who wrote The Dice Man. So, The Dice Man was written, I think, in the early 70s. And it was a film about a psychologist who would write down, he decided to write down six options and he would roll a dice. And then whatever the dice fell on, he would do that action or option no matter what. Similarly, this film is about that nature of choice. Once again, Neo is given a choice. So this time it is more of an ultimatum, we could say. His boss says, look, you have to be here or you have to be, or you're gone. And so another aspect of that conversation is that Neo has a problem with authority. So one of the aspects of the psychological rebellion or the awakening is that we rebel against the normal nature of how we are. And so this is shown within his normal working life. So Morpheus sends him a phone so he can contact him. He tells Neo that agents are searching for him. And at this time, Neo probably thinks the agents are going to get him based on his hacking exploits and not because he may or may not be the one. So Morpheus helps him escape part of the way and then gives him another option or another choice.
This is crazy.
There are two ways out of this building. One is that scaffold. The other is in their custody. You take a chance either way. I leave it to you.
So we see once again Morpheus giving Neo the choice, the agents or me. But the main aspect of that is that he gives free will. So he gives the choice, but he says it's completely up to you. And he says, I leave it to you. Because that's the nature of awakening. We have to allow everyone to have their own free will to do as they wish, whether they want to awaken or whether they don't want to awaken. We appreciate free will. So once again, as we said, Neo is asked to make a choice, but in this time, you could say he makes the wrong choice. So he doesn't trust Morpheus, we could say, and or he doesn't have enough courage because he has to jump on the side of the building, and the agents take him away for questioning. So this is the first sort of wrinkle that happens in the film, we could say. So in the next film, the next scene is a very strong scene with the agents. And so the agents are questioning him, trying to work things out.
It seems that you've been living two lives. In one life, you're Thomas A. Anderson, program writer for a respectable software company. You have a social security number, you pay your taxes, and you help your landlady carry out her garbage. The other life is lived in computers, where you go by the hacker alias Neo and are guilty of virtually every computer crime we have a law for. One of these lives has a future, and one of them does not.
So we see that Neo has two lives. He has the normal life, the conservative everyday man who pays his taxes, helps his landlady carry out her garbage. And then we have Neo the hacker, the physical rebellion, someone who is against the system by hacking into computers. But really what we're looking at is his normal life, Thomas Anderson, the everyday man. And the second life that we're really interested in is the life of awakening, which is the psychological and esoteric rebellion. So it's interesting that Thomas in Thomas Anderson means twin or of two lives. And once again, Neo is faced with a choice in this scene. He has to either help the agents to bring Morpheus in or not. And this is interesting because Agent Smith asks Neo to help remove the very thing that will liberate him. So we understand that Morpheus is going to help him to awaken, and the agents are asking him to help them bring him in. And so once again, Neo takes that higher value, we could say, the value of awakening, and he does this by giving Agent Smith the finger. The agents use their power against Neo, put a bug in him, and wipe his memory. So it's interesting that really the agents gave him no choice anyway. The agents were going to put a bug in him either way. He was either going to help or they're just going to put a bug in him and watch him. So there was really no choice there for Neo. So Neo wakes up from what might be a bad dream. He wakes up thinking that he is awoken from a bad dream, and Morpheus calls him.
You are the one, Neo. You see, you may have spent the last few years looking for me, but I've spent my entire life looking for you. Now, do you still want to meet?
So once again, it's Neo's decision. Morpheus tells Neo he believes he is the one. So Morpheus is still giving that belief. And once again, Morpheus gives Neo that choice, as we've said. You still want to meet. The choice, the free will, is completely still in your hands. So this is another interesting aspect of the awakening or the path, is that when the student is ready, the guru will come. So for someone who doesn't want to awaken, they won't really find the teachings to awaken. But someone who vibrates with that process of the path of wanting to awaken will eventually find some teachings that will help them to awaken, because they're vibrating at a certain level, and the teacher and the teachings vibrate at a certain level, and eventually they'll find each other. So Trinity picks Neo up. It's still raining. Neo gets in the car. And he's greeted with one of the crew, Switch. And at that time, she has a little bit of attitude towards Neo.
Listen to me, Copper Top. We don't have time for 20 questions. Right now, there's only one rule. Our way or the highway?
Fine.
Please, Neo, you have to trust me.
Why?
Because you have been down there, Neo. You know that road. You know exactly where it ends. And I know that's not where you want to be.
So once again, Neo is given a choice. And this is a bigger choice. This is more of a life choice. The door opens and Neo looks down a cold, bleak road. And that represents his old life. So the choices are the awakening or something new, or the old life. The thing is, we know about our old life. We know what happens. And if your old life is not working out, there's a possibility that you'll wish to change. And if you are happy with your life, you don't change. So once again, Neo has a choice, and he takes the choice of awakening. So there's an aspect, we could say, that we call definition, to define ourselves, to make that choice and put our effort into it. In that way, that's a very strong case there. Which way are we going to go? Because Neo could have very easily just walked out, but then Trinity says, you know, just trust us and see what happens, because you already know what's going on. You already know your life back at the apartment with all the hacking and your day at work and all those sorts of things. That there's something else that could possibly be more to your life or bring more to your life. So they take that bug that the agents put in Neo and they drive off to see Morpheus. And so in the next scene, Neo and Morpheus meet for the first time. And Morpheus says,
I can see it in your eyes. You have the look of a man who accepts what he sees because he is expecting to wake up. Ironically, this is not far from the truth. Do you believe in fate, Neo?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't like the idea that I'm not in control of my life.
I know exactly what you mean. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
So Morpheus telling Neo all about what he's experiencing at this point in time. Interestingly, the term splinter in your mind, at Star Wars, the first novel after Star Wars A New Hope, that was written was called Splinter in the Mind's Eye. So when we search for the awakening, we don't know what it is because it's unknown to us. We know there is something wrong with our normal life, but it doesn't have the happiness it once brought us. So we go searching. And so usually we search in the physical life for many things, for fame, for fortune. But eventually we find that those things, even the really great, wonderful, fantastic things in life, have some hollow aspect to them. And we need something a bit deeper. And so we search somewhere else. We search for a Gnostic class. We search for a Buddhist class. We search for a spiritual class. And so this is what Morpheus is explaining here. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You've felt it your entire life, that something's wrong with the world. You don't know what, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. So that's that spiritual inquietude that we speak of, that there's something else that we just know that there's something else, but we have to find it. So in that way, when we search for the awakening, at the start, we're blind. We don't know what we're doing. So we need someone. We need the guru, which Morpheus is, a guide, to show us where to go. And really, the guru should be someone who has walked the path before us. He should know what to do. Just like in life, if you want to start a business, you ask a businessman who's successful. You don't ask someone who's never started a business before. And it's the same with the esoteric teachings.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Matrix.
Do you want to know what it is?
So Morpheus goes on to explain the Matrix in the terms of the movie. But what he's really talking about is what the Buddhists call Maya, or the illusionary nature of things. There's an illusionary nature to reality as opposed to the true nature of reality. And so he says,
the Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room, you can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
So once again, we cannot escape from a prison that when we believe that we're free. Morpheus is telling Neo that he's actually a slave, that he's born into bondage, but he doesn't realize it yet. So the real problem with people is not that they are asleep, but they think they believe themselves to be awake. That's the real problem that we have. So if you know you're asleep, you know it.
Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself.
So Morpheus tells Neo one of the most important aspects of the awakening and walking the path. So it's a deeply profound line that Morpheus says there. And that is to understand that true wisdom, true knowledge comes from what we call direct experience. So it doesn't come from theories or beliefs or possibilities or from books, even though all these things we may start there. But we really need to directly experience reality to obtain true knowledge or gnosis. He always is looking to have Neo directly experience things. It's like, for instance, you can talk all about Paris and you can read about Paris and you can Google Paris and things like that. But until you actually go there, you don't really know it. You don't really know the nature of the subway and where the Notre Dame Cathedral is and the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe and all these sorts of things. So the path is not really about books so much as in experiencing directly reality and how it works with our consciousness, we could say.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
And once again, Morpheus gives him another choice, the final choice for Neo to start the awakening. So just like in the car, there's a level of definition, a level that he has to pass, so to speak. Now we have the pills and Morpheus lays it all on the line. He tells Neo that someone who is interested in the awakening really wants to hear. They really want to hear what Morpheus says next.
Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more. Follow me.
So Neo takes the red pill, which is that aspect of definition, because he could have taken the blue pill. And for Neo, things start getting a bit hazy here at this point. And so one of the aspects here is that Neo now trusts Morpheus and takes the pill, because that pill could have been anything. You know, they could have done anything there, but he trusts Morpheus and he takes the pill. The other aspect is that Morpheus says, follow me. So during the film, he starts to say, follow me, come with me. And because Neo trusts him implicitly now, Neo does exactly that. So up until this point in the film, Neo has been searching for the truth. He's been searching for the awakening, and he's at the door, basically. Now all he has to do is enter in and see for himself what is going on. And when he wakes up, it's not really a pretty picture. So Neo is saved. Neo wakes up in a completely different world, in a pod next to millions of other pods, and he's flushed like sewage down a watery drain, which reminds us of being born or reborn. And he falls in the sewage and Morpheus and the crew pick him up. And so the next scene with Morpheus, we see that they're reviving Neo.
We've done it, Trinity. We found him.
I hope you're right.
I don't have to hope. I know it.
So once again, Morpheus is helping to revive the body, and he believes in Neo. He believes that he's found the one. He just knows it. And so in the next scene, they're rebuilding his body. And if you remember, there's a huge amount of needles in him. It's almost like, you know, a massive form of acupuncture. And they're trying to rebuild the body and the muscles because they've never been used before. So this is an interesting aspect of the awakening, which I'll talk about. What we believe is that we only have a physical body, and that's all we have. But when we start to awaken and learn the esoteric teachings, we actually realize that we have seven bodies. So we have the physical body that we know of, the vital body, which is known by the acupuncturists. The Chinese medicine uses the vital body, the energies, the meridians. We have an astral body, which we know that we go into at night because there's an astral world. The mental body, the nature of the mind. A causal body related to the essence. The buddhic body related to the consciousness. And then a body of Atman, which relates to the being, which is the spark of divinity within us. So up until the point when we start to awaken, we don't realize that we have all these other bodies. We only realize that we have a physical body. And so we have to start learning about these bodies and, as a scientist, looking into them and seeing how they work. So in this scene, they're rebuilding these bodies. And so the film continues on. Neo awakes and Morpheus comes in to explain what's going on.
There's nothing I can say that will explain it for you, Neo. Come with me. See for yourself.
So once again, Morpheus is interested in the direct experience. He is instructing Neo to awaken via direct experience. Come with me. See for yourself. So he's explained aspects, but really you have to go and find out for yourself.
This isn't real.
What is real? How do you define real? If you're talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain.
Morpheus is telling Neo about the truth about the Matrix. Neo finds it hard to take it all in. And it sometimes is hard to understand that your life had an illusionary quality to it because you believed in it so much beforehand. So you start to see that your life is a bit of a sham, we could say. That there was something illusory about it and that we want to find the nature of the truth of these things. So Morpheus continues on because he's saying, what's real? You know, how do you define real? Do you really know what real is? And he says something, welcome to the desert of the real. And so after that, he continues on. And as I said, it gets worse. Morpheus tells Neo not only was his life an illusion, but the energy and force his body creates is being completely exploited without his knowledge. And that is the only reason he exists. From birth to death, he and the human race is nothing more than a battery for the machines. So it's particularly bleak indeed, the true reality of things.
What is the Matrix? Control. The Matrix is a computer-generated dream world built to keep us under control in order to change a human being into this.
A battery.
No. I don't believe it. It's not possible.
I didn't say it would be easy, Neo. I just said it would be the truth.
Stop! Let me out! Let me out! I want out!
Easy, Neo. Easy.
So the truth can be hard to swallow at first, but we get to understand that that's the true nature of things. And there's a beauty within it. And one of the main aspects that we can have an issue with is that we really have to understand that we are the cause of our own misery. So usually we blame others for our problems. So, for example, if we're driving along and someone cuts in front of us, we get angry. And so we blame that person for the anger. But really there's a part of us inside that's angry, that has a possibility of anger. And that's the issue. It's not the person who cuts us off. It's the part inside of us. So even though we have to start blaming ourselves for all of our problems, which can be a real issue, as I've said, it's actually very liberating because we're the cause of our own suffering, and so we have the power to change it. So we need to understand that second aspect. So Neo and Morpheus in the next scene have a bit of a heart-to-heart after Neo's reflected on the situation because he's thrown up in the last scene. He's not too happy with things. And so they talk, and this is what they say.
I can't go back, can I?
No. But if you could, would you really want to? And that his coming would hail the destruction of the Matrix, end the war, bring freedom to our people. That is why there are those of us who have spent our entire lives searching the Matrix, looking for him. I did what I did because I believe that search is over.
So Morpheus reaffirms that he believes that Neo is the one, and Morpheus is getting Neo to believe in himself, that he can awaken, that he is the one. The next scenes, Tank and Neo have a chat, and Tank and Neo talk about the training that's going to come up because Tank's the operator of the system. And then in the next scene, we begin the training. So Tank loads up the programs into Neo, and this is where he learns Kung Fu and many other things, many other fighting styles. And the awakening is like this. We gain more and more control in our lives. We gain virtues and remove those aspects of our psychology that have brought us suffering, which we call the ego. And so in the awakening, we begin to train our mind, our body, our emotions, and our senses to act correctly. Because at the moment, they just do whatever they want, especially the mind. So there's famous fighting scenes where Neo and Morpheus are sparring in a dojo. They're flying around the room. And the physical training is very similar, or it's symbolic of the psychological training that we go through in the awakening. The fight takes place in this scene is related to the battle within. Morpheus is trying to take Neo beyond the mind to the awakened consciousness. So even though that they're fighting, Morpheus is talking to his mind, and he says it in this way.
How did I beat you?
You're too fast.
Do you believe that my being stronger or faster has anything to do with my muscles in this place? You think that's air you're breathing now?
I remember when I saw the film for the first time, I was like, wow, that's how awesome. You think that's air you're breathing now? Because he's in the Matrix or in a construct. So Morpheus doesn't want Neo to think, but to act, to believe in himself. And so after all, he says this.
Don't think you are. Know you are.
So once again, this is the nature of the process of awakening. That we don't need to rationalize or work it out in the mind to know and what to do, in order to know what to do. When we are conscious or when we have awakened, we simply act based on the consciousness because we know. So the mind becomes an issue, we could say, because thinking is slow, so to speak. And when the consciousness, which is a higher aspect of ourselves, becomes awakened, we just naturally know what to do in any situation. And so it's far superior to the nature of the mind. And so they continue on.
I know what you're trying to do.
I'm trying to free your mind, Neo. But I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through it.
So I like that because he states something about the awakening. So we can only awaken for ourselves. We cannot awaken for another person. Sure, we can guide them to awakening, but we don't have a power to awaken someone else. We need guides to show us the path, and then we take that path. So he says, but I can only show you the door. You're the one who has to walk through it.
Okay, true to what I said earlier, there's much to cover, and we've only just hit halfway through the movie. So we're going to have to conclude part one of the review of The Matrix, and then we will bring part two in the next following week. So thank you, Christian, for the first part.
No worries. We'll see you next week.
And before I sign off, if you want more information about Gnosis in Newcastle, which is where Christian Keith, our tonight's speaker, and his partner So run a Gnostic Centre, then head to the website www.newcastlegnosis.org. That's www.newcastlegnosis, one word, is spelt newcastlegnosis.org. Or there's always the Gnostic Waves website, which has all past show recordings, so you can head to there. It's gnosticwaves.com, GnosticWaves.com. Or else, thank you very much for your company, and we will see you next week for The Matrix Part 2, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. I leave you with the concluding music from The Matrix. So good evening.